It's wildly inaccurate to paint all evangelical Christians in this country with a broad brush. But the fact is, the political religious right has long claimed this label for its own, going so far as to deny those who disagree on doctrine the right to even call themselves evangelical. And so in the media and in political activism, those terms have become almost interchangeable. So then, what about all of those people of faith who don't fit the conservative political right stereotype, who aren't white, Southern, and Republican? What about them? Well, they're getting hurt in large numbers, and my next guest has chronicled that experience in a compelling Religion Dispatches article headlined "Betrayed at the Polls, Evangelicals of Color at a Crossroads." Deborah Lee, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
I read your piece as a profile of a long-suffering minority that has pretty much been dismissed as the evangelical movement has become more and more politicized. Is that an accurate judgment to make?
I think so. I think what happened was there is a large population of people of color within white evangelical spaces who have given their time, their money, their lives to their Christian communities. And they woke up after the election seeing that 81% of white evangelicals, their fellow congregants, voted for a candidate who channeled white supremacy. And the word that I keep hearing is betrayal. People of color in white evangelical spaces feel betrayed by their brothers and sisters in Christ.
You present a few case studies very helpfully, including faith leader, people who have been deeply impacted by what's been happening. I wish you would describe one or two of these people.
Sure. In my reporting, I saw a variety of reactions among evangelicals of color, but I saw four big themes come up repeatedly. I'd say the first theme was evangelicals of color saying, "I am divesting from white evangelicalism." So, for example, this one congregant at a megachurch in California was sitting in church after the election, and her pastor was preaching about King Nebuchadnezzar's Median Wall, and he made a joke about how he probably got the Mexicans to pay for that wall, and the whole congregation burst out laughing. And this congregant, who's Korean-American and married to someone who is Mexican-American, she resigned from her position in the children's ministry. She and her husband scooped up their children. They walked out of the church and said, "We are never coming back here again." That's just one example. That's the divestment that I'm seeing is evangelicals of color saying, "We are no longer giving our money, we are no longer giving our bodies or our spirits to these institutions." I'm also seeing people on the other end of the spectrum saying, "Actually, we need to double down on our position in the white evangelical community, because white evangelicals will only listen to fellow believers, people who also profess a similar gospel." And so a lot of evangelicals of color are saying, "We've been in this fight for decades. Yes, the election felt like a betrayal, and it felt like the work we've been doing for decades was a waste. But this is a wake-up call that we need to stop centering the white community in conversations about race and really be bold in talking about why we need everyone to do the work in dismantling systems that oppress communities of color." Those are two examples. There's a lot more that I write about.
Do you know what kind of numbers we're talking about? How many families do you estimate are affected?
Well, we know based on polls that the evangelicals of color are a fast-growing constituency within the evangelical church. From 2007, they were at something like 19%, and then in 2014, they were at 24%. That's from a Pew poll, and church growth experts expect people of color to be the majority of the evangelical church and the majority of American Christianity after 2040. So we're talking about a population that is going to redefine American Christianity and evangelicalism and could fundamentally change how this one of the most powerful political religious constituencies in the country operates.
My curiosity is, where are these evangelicals of color going if they're leaving?
That is the million-dollar question. I think it's too soon to say. I am seeing movement in a few specific directions. I see people creating, I'm seeing an explosion of ethnic safe spaces for evangelicals of color. This exists both within the white evangelical world and outside of it. So, for example, after the election, a Facebook group formed. It's called Progressive Asian American Christians. And already they have more than 3,000 members. And they're organizing a conference in the summer. And they're really talking about, how do we actually organize our constituency to affect change in the Christian world? Because a lot of times, people of color feel like the only person in a largely dominant white community. And so they feel like their voices are not heard, they feel like they are not seen, and they have to assimilate to the dominant culture instead of asserting their full humanity. And so we see a lot of organizing happening in affinity groups. I've definitely seen, this has been happening for years, but women of color who are evangelical leaders, who are part of some of the biggest, most powerful evangelical institutions, they find each other. They have found each other and started having retreats where they meet and talk about their challenges and how they can work together to overcome them. So there's a lot of affinity group forming. People are going to mainline church denominations. They're going to organizations that aren't specifically Christian, but center people of color. And they're also forming their own churches and looking for ways to create community that really allows not just for diversity, but for authentic inclusion and for the pursuit of justice for communities of color.
Debbie, I am not so sure about what kind of relationship, healthy relationship, has gone on between people of color and white congregations in the evangelical community anyway, but the question, or maybe the hunch that I have, is that what's happening that you're describing may not be a bad thing. It may be a good thing.
That's, again, another million-dollar question. I mean, I think there's a lot of pain happening right now, that there may be a lot of really good things that come out of this. The election was perhaps a wake-up call to people who had remained in a relationship that maybe wasn't healthy. And now they're talking about creating something new and realizing that they don't have to necessarily be a part of these big, powerful institutions, but they can create something on their own. So I definitely hear a lot of hope in people's voices as they talk about the future and as they organize. At the same time, there's incredible pain, because these are relationships that have been built over decades. These are families who have been part of these communities for decades. And when you have that kind of betrayal, I mean, it feels like divorce when I talk to people. They talk about, you know, really splitting up from people that they have grown to love and care about and devote themselves to. So I think it's a mix of good and bad.
Debbie, do you also find some white evangelicals that are wrestling with the same kind of issues that people of color in the evangelical community are dealing with?
What I'm hearing is that there is a big question of understanding white identity within the church. We have to remember that it wasn't 100% of white evangelicals who voted for Trump. There was still another 21% who did not vote for Trump. And I think in those communities, they're really talking about, what is our responsibility as white evangelicals who did not vote for Trump? How do we speak to the white evangelicals who did vote for him? And I think there's kind of a mixed reaction. You know, there are a lot of people who are very quick to try to distance themselves from the Trump voters and say, oh, we're not like them. And they don't want to kind of take responsibility for the larger culture that they benefit from and that they are a part of and that they play into and that they are complicit in. And then there are all also white evangelicals who are saying, okay, this means we need to push even harder with our brothers and sisters who are white, and we need to have these conversations, and we need to have our own affinity group where we can wrestle with these complex questions of race and gender and sexual orientation and gender identity and just the range of identities that humankind encompasses that the white evangelical church seems to really want to draw boundaries around.
I want to turn now, if we can, to your really good book, Rescuing Jesus, How People of Color, Women, and Queer Christians Are Reclaiming Evangelicalism. The book came out in 2015. How has the picture changed, do you think, in the intervening months?
That's a great question. What I'm seeing is, so the book really explores how these different communities within the dominant evangelical world operate and organize. And what we're seeing is their work seems to be more essential than ever. I think in the intervening months, we had the campaign cycle, we had the election, and we had really just this surfacing of a lot of the racism and homophobia and transphobia and sexism that these communities within evangelicalism have been talking about for so long. And for so long, they felt like their voices weren't heard. And for so long, they were told that their concerns were really overblown and that these forms of discrimination and oppression really didn't exist within the evangelical world. And I think the election really proved them right. And, you know, the book really gives voice to their experiences and what it's like to be a minority within the evangelical world. It's a picture and a story that we don't hear often in the media. And it gives you a look into why people who are oppressed within this religious community, why they stay and why they stay and try to work it out, and also why some of them leave. So I think the year and a half since the book came out has really made their stories more relevant and urgent than ever.
So is the split that you identify in both your Religion Dispatches piece and in the book, is that split inevitably going to grow wider?
I don't know if I would call it a clean split. I think it's so complicated because, I mean, when you think about evangelicals of color, that term encompasses tremendous diversity, a ton of different communities, and it kind of how they're reacting kind of depends on which corner of evangelical you're peering into. And so, yes, there's definitely a split. There's definitely divestment happening. A lot of evangelicals of color just simply leaving white evangelical spaces. But like I said, there are also many of them who are staying and refusing to split, refusing the divorce and saying, we're going to stay and we are going to fight racism from within the system. And so it's really messy. Is the ideological and values split going to grow wider? I think so. I think the election has really brought people, emboldened people. The election has emboldened people of color to really lean into their identity and name white supremacy within the evangelical church and within America when they see it, and really double down on their efforts to eradicate it and call people to account who are complicit in it. And so, yes, I think in terms of the value split, it's going to become much more amplified. People are going to become much more vocal, and we're going to see a lot more organizing taking place. That may look different depending on where you're looking, though.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just impressed by the fact that you're describing something that is very painful on the one hand, and yet if it goes well, on the other hand, may bring a strength to faith and action that hasn't been there before.
I certainly, when I was done with the book, I certainly felt a lot of hope because of the communities that I was reporting on. They were exhibiting tremendous resilience, hope, and practical organizing skills. They were not simply coming together and feeling bad about their situation, but they were taking very practical steps to change the communities that they were a part of and challenge those communities. At the same time, we see that there is tremendous resistance to the work that they're doing. It's not going to be easy. I mean, I think the victory of Donald Trump and the fact that white evangelicals helped bring him into office shows us just that. It's not going to be an easy fight. It's not going to be a few simple conversations and a little bit of engagement here and there. It's really going to require the dedication and the work of a lot of people and the responsibility of white evangelicals to examine themselves, examine their churches, examine their theologies, examine their ideologies that got them to a place where they could support someone who really embodies the opposite of Jesus Christ. He does not seem to embody the values of the gospel that they profess. So I think there's going to be evangelicalism is in the midst of a major identity crisis right now. More specifically, white evangelicalism is in the midst of a major identity crisis right now. And I think there's going to be a lot of work to be done to bring us to that place where the faith community is in a much more positive and healthy position.
Is there any path to reconciliation in this picture?
I think the word reconciliation is really an interesting one, and one that's been used in the evangelical world a lot, but that is actually a bit problematic. So racial reconciliation is a term that evangelicals use. They've been using it for decades, trying to reconcile the races. But one of the things I explore in my story is the fact that, one, historically, white evangelicals have been very resistant to racial reconciliation. Conversations about race make them uncomfortable. And two, their idea of reconciliation is very much about personal relationships with someone of a different race. It's not about dismantling the systems that oppress communities of color. And so that leads a lot of evangelicals of color to ask, well, what are we reconciling to? Like, what part of American Christian history are we reconciling to? Are we reconciling to using the Bible as a justification for slavery? Are we reconciling to white Christian involvement and complicity in Jim Crow segregation? Are we reacting to white evangelicals demonizing and criticizing the civil rights movement? Like, what are we reconciling to? I think that's a big question that a lot of evangelicals of color are asking right now. So I think maybe reconciliation is not the right word. Maybe it's reparations. Maybe it's correcting for the sins and the brutality and the oppression of that's taken place over generations and generations. I think it's a really big undertaking that is going to require evangelicals, especially white evangelicals, to do the work of learning their history and dedicating themselves to the actual work of addressing the policies within the church and within the country that hurt communities of color that white people benefit from.
So what should listeners of the show keep in mind about the state of evangelical Christianity in this country today?
I think they should really pay attention to it. I think especially they should especially pay attention to evangelicals of color, because those are the stories that we really don't hear very often. They become invisible and silent because white evangelical leaders with a lot of power have very, very big platforms. I think all Americans need to pay attention to evangelicals of color, because they are a growing demographic that's going to become the majority of evangelicalism and the majority of American Christianity. And they could really upend and reshape this powerful religious constituency. So I think paying attention is one thing. And then the second thing would be finding ways, if you're religious within your religious context, if you're not within your community context, ways that we can learn from kind of this story playing out within evangelicalism, because I don't think it's specific to the evangelical world. I think it's actually applicable to all of America, because from the election, we saw that overall white America voted for a candidate who channeled white nationalism. America is still dealing with its original sin. We are all dealing with the consequences of that. And we are not going to have a peaceful society unless we all take responsibility to not just think about it, but to really take practical steps of engaging our communities, building bridges across boundaries, and working on policies that support the equality and dignity of all human beings.
Deborah Lee is an award-winning journalist, radio producer, and author. Her book is titled Rescuing Jesus: How People of Color, Women, and Queer Christians Are Reclaiming Evangelicalism. And we'll link to her Religion Dispatches article, Betrayed at the Polls, Evangelicals of Color at a Crossroads, from stateofbelief.com. Deborah, great interview. You're doing such important work. It's exciting to hear. Thanks so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.